Imagine living in a world where the economic system you're told represents freedom is actually designed to benefit a small elite at the expense of democratic principles. This is the world Noam Chomsky exposes in Profit Over People. Since its publication, the book has become required reading in political science departments worldwide, influencing generations of activists, including figures like Bernie Sanders. Its examination of neoliberalism has only grown more relevant as income inequality reaches historic levels. The fundamental question Chomsky poses is disarmingly simple yet profound. What if the economic doctrine celebrated in mainstream discourse actually undermines the democratic values it claims to uphold? Neoliberalism portrays itself as liberty's champion through free markets, but evidence contradicts this narrative. This economic doctrine, which rose to prominence in the 1970s under Reagan and Thatcher and spread globally through international institutions, advocates trade liberalization, privatization, and minimal government intervention. History reveals a different reality. The most successful economic development cases relied on significant state involvement. South Korea achieved tenfold growth between 1960-1990 through directed credit, import restrictions, and government oversight. Japan, Korea, and Taiwan actually deviated further from free market principles than supposedly interventionist countries like India. The contrast is clear. East Asian nations maintained capital controls and ensured equitable income distribution through education policies, while Latin American economies following neoliberal prescriptions faced greater inequality and instability. Britain only embraced free trade after securing industrial dominance through 150 years of protectionism. Today's corporate giants, from Boeing to pharmaceutical companies, depend heavily on state support, often privatizing profits from publicly funded research. How can elites maintain control when, as philosopher David Hume noted, force is always on the side of the governed? The answer lies in what Walter Lippmann called the manufacture of consent, controlling what people think rather than what they do. This approach has deep historical roots. Alexander Hamilton described the people as a great beast to be tamed, while James Madison designed the constitutional system to protect the minority of the opulent against the majority by limiting the landless masses' power. Modern techniques for managing democracy emerged in the early 20th century. Edward Bernays argued that intelligent minorities must make use of propaganda continuously, while Lippmann advocated that an elite of responsible men should make decisions while the public serves merely as spectators. This systematic management has created a gap between public preferences and policy outcomes. Despite 80-90% of Americans supporting federal guarantees for health care and Social Security, these positions remain largely excluded from mainstream political discourse, revealing how effectively consent is engineered in democratic societies. The doctrine of free markets operates with a striking double standard, forcefully imposed on vulnerable nations, while powerful countries shield themselves from market discipline. This hypocrisy dates back to the 17th century, when Britain rose through aggressive state intervention. NAFTA exemplifies this contradiction. Despite its free trade label, it contains heavily protectionist measures, creating strategic advantages. Complex rules blocking Asian and European competitors, and intellectual property provisions that wealthy nations themselves rejected during their own development. This selective application appears in WTO disputes, too. When WTO mechanisms advance American interests, they're praised as universal principles. Yet when the EU challenged American policy on Cuba, U.S. media reframed it as essentially political. As Secretary Albright stated, the U.S. will act multilaterally when we can and unilaterally as we must. Domestically, the U.S. economy diverges from neoliberal principles. Large corporations have created internal planning systems resembling state-directed economies. Despite its wealth, America shares child mortality rates with Cuba and leads industrial nations in hunger and child poverty, revealing corporate dominance's profound influence over public welfare. To understand what democracy and free markets truly mean in practice, examine Latin America, Washington's backyard for nearly a century, where American influence reveals the true nature of the Washington Consensus. Nicaragua exemplifies this pattern. After its legitimate 1984 democratic election, the U.S. escalated economic warfare and proxy attacks. Before the 1990 election, Washington made clear that Nicaragua would face continued economic warfare unless its preferred candidate won. When this candidate prevailed, American commentators celebrated, while acknowledging success came from wrecking the economy and waging a deadly proxy war. Even liberal intellectuals endorsed causing civilian suffering as perfectly legitimate to achieve desired outcomes. Haiti demonstrates a similar dynamic. President Aristide, winner of Haiti's first democratic election with 67% of the vote, returned from exile in 1994 only after accepting economic programs favoring U.S. investors. The U.S. undermined sanctions against the coup regime and forced the democratic government to abandon reforms. Under USAID World Bank strategies, manufacturers' profits soared, while workers' wages fell 56%. The resulting 5% voter turnout revealed Haitians' disillusionment with this version of democracy. The Zapatista uprising in Chiapas, Mexico, on January 1, 1994, the day NAFTA took effect, represented a powerful challenge to neoliberal doctrine. The indigenous rebels declared NAFTA a death sentence for their communities after failed peaceful reform attempts. Their rebellion emerged from complete marginalization and poverty, reflecting broader Mexican conditions where half the population lacked resources for basic needs, up from 30% in 1980 when neoliberal reforms began. Following IMF World Bank prescriptions, Mexico had shifted from subsistence agriculture to export commodities, benefiting large agribusiness while causing widespread malnutrition and declining rural employment. Manufacturing wages fell by 40% between 1980-1994, while labor's share of GDP declined by over a third. Mexican officials perversely celebrated falling wages as an investment incentive alongside systematic labor repression. NAFTA's primary appeal to business was its ability to lock in these neoliberal reforms, reversing decades of progress in labor rights. Despite Mexico following textbook market economic policies, substantial opposition emerged against policies undermining constitutional protections. The Zapatista rebellion resonated internationally, creating solidarity networks that helped deter military repression. Their innovative use of the internet energized global justice activism as people recognized similar concerns across different contexts. Despite neoliberalism's assault on democracy, Chomsky maintains that humans are fundamentally democratic. Corporate efforts to prevent genuine democracy through media control and campaign finance reveal the system's vulnerability to popular movements. History offers encouragement. The abolition of slavery, women's suffrage, the 8-hour workday, and ending child labor were once considered impossible. South Africa's transformation from apartheid to democracy demonstrates what human determination can achieve against entrenched power. Throughout history, elites have repeatedly declared the end of history when their preferred economic system seemed secure. During the early 19th century neoliberal doctrine, America's Gilded Age, and the Roaring Twenties. Each time, popular movements forced elites to retreat. Despite neoliberalism's recent dominance, these proclaimed ends inevitably fail as people organize for justice. Movements like Black Lives Matter, climate activism, and digital labor organizing show resistance remains vital. While discontent with democracy grows alongside inequality, today's struggles begin from higher expectations than previous eras. The choice remains: accept a world where profit dictates all aspects of life, or reclaim the democratic promise that people, not corporations, should determine our collective future.